from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, a few weeks ago, Newt Gingrich came on Fox News Channel. Yeah, I know, but somebody's got to watch it. And he announced, almost as if, well, not almost, as if introducing a new branding campaign. He'd come from a meeting, I think a retreat, a Republican retreat, and was announcing it. And this was the first I'd heard of it. And then you, of course, have seen the results in days since. And what Newty was saying is that we've got to do a campaign called Drill Here, Drill Now, Pay Less. Apropos of offshore oil drilling. And suddenly there is John McCain switching his position on offshore oil drilling. And suddenly there are commercials by the boatload from the people who bring you oil and gas about the necessity for offshore oil. And, you know, all and an ad at the top of Drudge Report.
Drill here, drill now, pay less.
Of course, by drill here, they mean California and Florida. They don't mean where you are if you're not in California, Florida, because that's not where Republicans want to get their votes. Well, Florida, maybe. But and drill now, you can't because, according to the New York Times, there are no drilling ships available. There's a years-long backlog to get the ships to do the drilling. So pay less? Well, yeah, if you drive less. But we haven't heard
drill here, drill now, pay less
this week. Strangely enough, we here in New Orleans have heard something else, or at least smelled something else. The fine, fine aerosolization of heavy fuel oil dumped in the Mississippi River by a barge loaded with the stuff. And now it's floating out toward the wetlands, where there have so far been 60 oiled egrets found. And they're good eating, because you don't have to batter them. Well, you might want to batter them just to stun them. And suddenly we're not hearing drill here, drill now, pay less, because there's oil in the river that is the heartland of the nation's commerce. The Mississippi, you've heard of it? You know how it's spelled. Anyway, apropos of that, a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico off the Mississippi River this year will be the largest ever and last longer than ever before. This is even before the oil was spilled. Imagine now. Babe, we're going for the record. Marine life will be affected for hundreds of miles, according to a scientist. It's definitely the worst we've seen in the last 5 years. Well, that's not really eons, but it's 5 years. This according to a Texas A&M University professor of oceanography. He's been studying the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. It's so-called because the oxygen-depleted water kills marine life. And you really wouldn't want to call it, I don't know, the nightclub district as a result. So dead zone seemed a good candidate for the name. The phenomenon is caused when salt water loses large amounts of oxygen, typically associated with an area off the Louisiana coast at the mouth of the Mississippi. This year's dead zone has been aggravated by flood runoff from heavy spring rains and additional runoff moving into the Gulf from record floods along the Mississippi. So thanks to all you people up the Mississippi there for the runoff. Speaking of fish, toxicologists at Clemson University in South Carolina have found that hybrid striped bass exposed to Prozac, you know, because people flush away the pills, you do know that, were markedly less interested in feeding than other fish. The more Prozac ingested, the less the appetite. The fish also did things that could lead to life-shortening events, like failing to take usual precautions around predators, making them easier prey. So if it's not the dead zone, it's the blissed out zone. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you caught the story about the American astronaut from, I think, Apollo 14, who did a radio interview this week saying, yeah, there have been contacts with aliens. NASA knows all about it. And yeah, they're small and they have large eyes. And yeah. And I was on a radio program that kind of specializes in this material last night, although the subject did not come up, but it caused me in preparation to sort of scan my thoughts on the subject of, you know, contacts with aliens. Send for your free DVD now. And Here's my question. Why are all the depictions and all the reports of creatures from outer space, why do they all agree that these creatures look like characters from a Keane painting? See, it's just a failure of imagination. That's my beef. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And ladies and gentlemen, we've got a driver, and that's a start. The first trial at Guantanamo Bay under the military commission's, can't really call it a law, can you? Is, you know this, right? Osama bin Laden's driver. We've got a driver, and that's a start. Beatles called it his driver. I'm not kidding. They're kidding, but I'm not. We've got the driver. That's the first trial up of the worst of the worst. Now, maybe he's a bad driver. Maybe that's what they mean. But, man, I'd hate if any of the people who've ever driven me ever got called to trial. Accused of, I don't know, whatever it is I do. In that trial, by the way, just to make you proud of being an American, military commission rules allow the use of evidence obtained from, quote, cruel and, quote, inhuman interrogation methods if the judge finds it reliable and relevant. And the statements were obtained before 2005. See, you're not allowing cruel and inhuman anymore. After 2005, I guess. But, you know, those were the cruel and inhuman years, weren't they? God, that's the way I think of him. On this related subject, lawyers for the Bush administration told the CIA in 2002 that CIA officers could legally use waterboarding and other harsh measures while interrogating suspects as long as they acted, quote, in good faith, unquote. You want a good faith torture because and did not deliberately seek to inflict severe pain. So it's about the state of mind of the interrogator. This is according to a Justice Department memo made public this week. This was intended to assuage CIA concerns that their guys would end up in the pokey Interrogators needed only to possess an honest belief that their actions did not cause severe suffering.
I'm not hurting you, am I?
And the honest belief did not, according to the Justice Department memo, have to be based on reality. Well, why should that honest belief be different from the rest of what we've been told the last 7 years? Although an honest belief need not be reasonable, this is a quote, such a belief is easier to establish where there's a reasonable basis for it. This is signed by Jay Bybee, then an assistant attorney general working with John Yoo. You know who Yoo is. The absence of specific intent negates the charge of torture. Bybee also signed on to that other torture memo that said it wasn't really torture if it didn't inflict pain as severe as to result in death or permanent organ damage. Yeah, I say, makes you proud. By the way, the memo was released with about 23 of the 24 pages blacked out. This is the part we're allowed to hear. This is the part they're proud of. A CIA spokesperson said the interrogation policies were safe, lawful, and effective. The Bybee memo was rescinded more than 3 years ago, which I guess is why you can't admit evidence from inhumane or coercive tactics into the driver's trial if the evidence was taken before after 2005. Anyway, as I say, makes you proud. Apropos of that, we have this from Scott McClellan, who was President Bush's press secretary for 3 years, this in an interview a few days ago.
When I went out and said that we do not torture, we adhere to our international treaties and so forth, I was relying on what information was being given to me. Now, looking back on that, I hold a very different view when I know today that we were engaged in waterboarding and some other harsh interrogation methods, and I would have never made those comments from the podium had I known exactly what was happening in some of those settings. I could not say honestly today that this administration does not believe in torture or does not engage in torture.
What about, can you say it honestly? You can't say it honestly, but what about in good faith? With a good faith basis, not rooted in reality. Get back to me on that, will you, Scott? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you've been keeping up with it. I mention it every week at the end of the broadcast. The merger between the two extant satellite radio companies, Sirius and XM, it was finally approved, I believe, on Friday by the FCC. And I bring it up partly because it's interesting to me. Howard Stern, who is the centerpiece of Sirius Satellite Radio, that's the way you tell them apart. Do you want Martha Stewart or do you want Howard Stern? Or no, do you want Oprah or do you want Howard Stern? That's the way to tell them apart. Anyway, Howard Stern, who... I guess, you know, I used to have this theory that he and Rush Limbaugh were the same guy, that he took off the wig and put on the fat suit at noon, because they both sort of had the same key to understanding the listening audience, which is the only topic really, really of consistent, enduring interest to build an audience of that size is oneself. But now they both signed... You know, Howard has a $500 million contract. Rush has a $400 million contract, but who's counting? Howard Stern made his fame originally by picking on, criticizing, ridiculing his bosses. That was the way he originally, before he learned to spank starlets, aspiring starlets, excuse me, or aging strippers. He was making fun of the guys he worked for, which is an old radio gimmick, but he took it to new and more scabrous heights and would insult his boss right in front of the guy. He'd call his boss into the studio and then insult him to his face, which was a good bit. Here's how far he's gone from that. Here's Howard Stern on the impending merger of XM and Sirius before the final vote was cast.
On the FCC, some of the FCC commissioners are you know, Democrats and some Republicans. So two of the Republicans had said they approved the merger. The two Democrats said no way. And I was saying to myself, on what basis? The Department of Justice has said this thing isn't a monopoly. There's absolutely no legal reason why.
To keep it apart.
Right. Yeah. Unless somebody's talking a lot to the NAB. Yesterday, a thing came out where there was a woman who was a Republican who said her vote was the final vote on the merger, and it seems as if she will vote to approve it. And essentially, according to this article, it has been approved. Wall Street already reacted, and the stock went up and all of this. So I assumed that it was a done deal.
Right.
But there's been no merger approved. Again, it's been 10 million years, and this merger can't get decided on. Listen. What I know about the FCC government can fit into a thimble, but I got so crazy over this yesterday. So I called my agent, and my agent, you know, he's very liberal, Democrat kind of guy.
Oh, yes.
I go, that's it. He goes, what do you mean? I go, you know what, Don? I voted Republican and I voted Democrat. I have vowed I will never vote for a Democrat again. I don't give a f-
No matter who they are?
No matter who they are, I don't care if God becomes a Democrat. I said I backed Hillary Clinton, I backed Al Gore, I backed John Kerry. I am done with them. And he goes, what happened? I go, the fact that these Democrats on the FCC are communists, they're for communism. They don't want to see companies. This is gangsterism. I said, this is crazy.
You're right there. It's gangsterism. It's communism. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just to review, the merger has been under consideration for 16 months, not 10,000 years. And when XM and Sirius first got licenses from the FCC to go into operation, they made two promises. First promise, they would never merge. That was a promise made to the federal government. Second promise that they would, within 18 months, develop a radio that could receive both XM and Sirius. Never happened. So those are the people that Howard Stern is now defending against the communists. It just shows you the difference $500 million can make. And now, the apologies of the week. U.S. Representative Don Young was forced this week to pull from the radio a campaign commercial that touted him as the recipient of a Hero of the Taxpayers Award by a fiscal watchdog group. The commercial said the Republican congressman had been singled out for an award by Taxpayers for Common Sense. That was the group that brought national scrutiny to the price tags of the so-called Bridges to Nowhere that Young sponsored. More than a dozen people who heard the commercials air on radio in Anchorage called Taxpayers for Common Sense to ask them why they'd given Young an award. The organization did give Young an award, the Golden Fleece Award, for his backing of the bridge. Young's campaign said the ad was supposed to refer to the Hero of the American Taxpayer Award he recently received from Americans for Tax Reform, a conservative group led by Grover Norquist. But the Young campaign mistakenly referred to Taxpayers for Common Sense. His spokesperson called the commercial a mistake, apologized for any inconvenience it caused, and took it off the air. 64 years after black soldiers were wrongly court-martialed at Seattle's Fort Lawton, the U.S. Army apologized this week. Honor was restored for 43 African-American soldiers who were unjustly accused and 28 who were unjustly convicted in the largest U.S. Army court-martial of World War II. The Army admitted that prosecutor misconduct led to an unfair trial and a miscarriage of justice, said Ronald James, Assistant Secretary of the Army. The Army is genuinely sorry. I am sorry. I'm sorry your family members, your husbands, your fathers, your grandfathers, and loved ones lost years of their freedom. Just moments for you to think about that. U.S. Representative John Culberson of Houston apologized this week for condemning NASA as a failure and a waste of federal money. Every agency wastes money, but NASA itself is not a waste, the Republican lawmaker said during a video conference. These fine people, the scientists and engineers there at NASA, I certainly owe these folks an apology because that is not what I meant to say. Culberson's statements last week were met with criticism from NASA supporters in Houston, where I guess he represents. Miley Cyrus has apologized to fellow Disney stars Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez for taking aim at them in an online video. The Hannah Montana star, hey, she's already 15, earlier this week posted footage of herself and her best pal joking around as they mocked an earlier video made by Gomez and Lovato in which they talk about their love of makeup and cartoon characters, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Cyrus boasted about a new Teenage Ninja Turtles t-shirt she's bought. Cyrus' video was then interspersed with Gomez's and Lovato's footage and posted on YouTube. The attack sent online gossips into a spin, but Miley insists she was just being funny. See? She says, if we offended them on YouTube, then I'm sorry. You know? Like, we were just having fun, you know what I mean? Yeah, we know. The Mainichi newspapers in Japan continued to post extremely inappropriate articles in the YY column of the Mainichi Daily News, its English website. It's a Japanese newspaper. We have reported the results of an in-house investigation, they say. We continue to post articles that contained incorrect information about Japan and indecent sexual content. I know which I would like to read. These articles, many of which were not checked, should not have been dispatched to Japan or the world. We apologize deeply for causing many people trouble and for betraying the public's trust in the Mainichi Shimbun. I bet they're not being downsized. I bet they have more reporters than the LA. The Spam King was sentenced on Tuesday to 47 months in prison. With a ruling, the court hopes sends a message to other online criminals. Robert Soloway, the man known as the Spam King. For the massive volume of spam he sent out, pleaded guilty to fraud, spamming, and tax evasion. After an unusually long sentencing hearing lasting 2.5 days, Judge Marsha Pechman handed down her sentence in Seattle. Soloway apologized to the judge and to his family, admitting that his actions were wrong. There's no one else to blame but myself, he said. Soloway has apologized for his activities before, after he was investigated in 1999 in California for spamming. He told detectives that he was sorry and had learned a lot. He then moved to another state and immediately engaged in the same behavior. Well, he learned how to pack the car. The president of the College Republicans at USC in Los Angeles is charging that CNN used a fake College Republican in its broadcast that would claim there was a lack of enthusiasm on campus for John McCain. CNN spokeswoman says it was an inadvertent error. CNN interviewed someone identified as Eric Perlmutter, who was said to be a USC student and College Republican. We try to get people out to our College Republican meetings, but we can't seem to get the same amount of support, he said to CNN. Ben Myers, president of USC College Republicans, said, I have never met Eric Perlmutter. I've never seen him at a College Republican meeting. He's not on our membership roster. I don't know why someone would think he speaks for us. As far as I know, he could be a Democrat. A CNN spokeswoman admitted the error. Eric Perlmutter attends USC and says he is a registered Republican. He was inadvertently identified on screen as a member of the College Republicans. We regret that error, said CNN. Kind of an apology. Yusuf Islam, formerly known as Cat Stevens, accepted libel damages over articles written about him which suggested he refused to talk to women who didn't cover their heads. He received an unspecified payment for an article which was run by the World Entertainment News Network. Well, they're reputable people. I've never heard of them. And distributed to various subscribers, which alleged that Yusuf Islam ignores bareheaded women. In addition to the settlement, World Entertainment News Network has publicly apologized. Columbia, Missouri police issued an apology this week to anyone alarmed by a training exercise on the evening of July 16th at the Planned Parenthood offices. The Columbia Police Department SWAT team and crisis negotiation team conducted a joint training exercise at Planned Parenthood to practice handling a hostage situation, but failed to notify the public before the drill took place. The city apologized in particular to Al and Deborah Harris, owners of A Cut Above the Rest Hair Salon, for causing alarm with the training activity. He's right next door. He saw numerous officers wearing riot gear and carrying guns outside Planned Parenthood. He said he believed several of his customers did not show up for their appointments because of the incident. And finally, graffiti writer Daniel Montano was sentenced in the criminal division of Allegheny County Court to 5 years in prison, 10 years probation, $232,000 restitution, and 2,500 hours of community service. The severity said the judge was based on a difficult case with a lot of uniqueness. He is a former student at the Art Institute of San Francisco, the largest graffiti prosecution in the U.S., said the detective involved. In May, Montano pleaded guilty to 75 counts of vandalizing buildings and other property. This is in Pittsburgh. He argued that no one in this courtroom, even in this building, could begin to pay this, as there is no debtor's prison. The restitution puts him on probation for the rest of his life, said his attorney, actually. His client was addicted to various drugs, including Vicodin, Xanax, cocaine, heroin, and marijuana, and had a bipolar personality to boot. He had been given chances before, it says here. Where's the apology? Oh, he said he had a loss of touch with reality, Montano, and the 6 months he's already spent in jail has been good for me. I'm now clear-headed. I lost my family, my freedom, and my choices. I want to apologize to everyone I hurt. I'm ready, even eager at this point, to make reparation. A healthy dose of pain was what I needed. Well, I have some people at Gitmo he should talk to. You know, good faith pain. Good faith. Honest belief that it's not really going to damage you or hurt you or anything like that. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What's going on in Pakistan? Well, the good news is that A.Q. Khan, we've talked about him on this broadcast before. He's the guy who was the father of the Pakistani nuclear program. And he admitted, or maybe he didn't admit, depending on whom you ask, that he proliferated information and materials to North Korea, Libya, and Iran. He was arrested by the Pakistanis, put under house arrest. No one else was allowed to question him. And so the other shoe drops. Islamabad High Court this week freed disgraced Pakistani nuclear scientist A.Q. Khan from house arrest. Restricted him, though, from meeting with the media. Dang! Dang! I wanted him on. The court gave its verdict after Khan challenged his house arrest. Well, what took you so long, babe? In a letter to the court, Khan said he'd been misquoted by the media, as he had not issued any statement compromising national interests. I cannot even imagine making a statement detrimental to the interests of my beloved country, for which I and my family made such sacrifice. He did not publish. He said the media had misquoted him and did not publish his clarifications. After the court decision, local media said Khan's house arrest had come to an end. He would be allowed to carry out research work. Oh, good. Maybe publish it. Maybe just send emails to friends in other countries. Move within the country and meet relatives. A.Q. Khan, a clean bill of health, a free nuclear proliferator. And a crisis meeting of Pakistan's new coalition government has been warned it could lose control of the Northwest Frontier Province. That's one of those tribal areas up near Afghanistan. Oh, this is an interesting note from the Australian newspaper. The Northwest Frontier Province is believed to hold most of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal. Good night, everybody. Weren't we worried about Iraq because we didn't want the weapons of mass destruction that it didn't have to get into the hands of the terrorists that it wasn't supporting? Yes, the answer is yes. The warning came from the coalition leader in Pakistan, although he's part of the new government, is regarded as having the closest links to al-Qaeda and Taliban militants sweeping through that region. He bluntly told his colleagues, the Northwest Frontier Province is breaking away from Pakistan. That is what is happening. That is the reality. Days from now, the new Pakistani prime minister will be meeting with President, oh, what's his name? Come on, he's still the president. Oh, Bush. Reports said that Maulana Fazlur Rahman, regarded as having unparalleled insight into the mood of the 3 million tribesmen in the frontier province, was backed in his assessment by members of the coalition government from the ruling party. They, too, told the meeting of jihadi militant advances throughout the province, with their influence extending to most so-called settled areas, including the major city of Peshawar. But that's where the nuclear arsenal is kept, ladies and gentlemen. Sweet dreams. I don't know what I'm feeling.
Another video game goes to the movies. Is this the last one standing in the lobby?
And a new reality show channel premieres with what else? A new reality show.
Got to be inside Extra Access tonight for the end of July 2008.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo, anchoring tonight from rehab.
Hollywood has had a love affair with video games ever since that love affair began. And this summer's success with game-based films has intensified the search for the next blockbuster aimed at gamers. This time, Jonathan Neptune, head of Entropy Pictures, is going back in video game history, all the way to the beginning.
In the beginning, there was, what, right? Pong, right? So you ask yourself, okay, who owns the rights to Pong, right? Answer, nobody, because until now, nobody knew how to tell the story of Pong, right, in a filmic context, right?
In came the creative team behind The Driven Snow and the animated fantasy adventure 10,000 Centipedes, Rob and Nancy Stonecipher.
We saw the world of Pong as a dark, post-apocalyptic world, very, very post-Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's why it appeared on the surface to be so simple and supposedly two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Everything else was destroyed by the big asteroid accident.
The story of Pong really is the story of starting over big time.
That's what excited me, right? The big theme of the piece. And the fact that convinced me that with $80 million worth of CGI effects, the world of Pong would actually be revealed to be incredibly complex. Almost four-dimensional, right? That's why we're shooting it in 3D.
For contractual reasons, the names of the stars of the 3D feature, tentatively titled Pong, are being kept under wraps at the moment. Although we can say Vin Diesel fans won't be disappointed. But executive producer Jonathan Neptune denies recent rumors of turmoil on the set.
Okay, the Stonecipher's had a hard out, right? They were committed down in New Zealand to Waltz of the Wallabies, right? We were running long because of the complexity of some of the really weird angled bounce sequences. We were doing a lot of on-set rewrites, all right? They wanted their money. We wanted them off the set for hygiene reasons. But it all worked out.
Salvatore Pegasus, editor of Gamed magazine, has seen early footage of Pong. And even if he weren't consulting on the film, he'd be impressed.
It's a far more dystopic world than we've ever seen before. The difference between good and evil is simply the difference between beep and boop. It's incredibly thematic, and the 3D takes it to a whole other dimension, literally.
Pong the movie will be in theaters by next summer, and the producers hope that if it's successful, there'll be a spin-off version for bars, taking the two dots back where it all began.
This summer's conclave of TV critics in Hollywood saw more than new shows. They saw the birth, or at least the press conference, about the birth of a new cable network devoted entirely to reality shows. The Glue Network made its debut announcing its first original series, one that's bound to be controversial. We sat down with Andy Kopros, the host of Pimp My Stiff.
The embalmer is a makeup artist. He's a designer. He does hair. All of the great disciplines are represented in The Embalmer. And our object each season is to find the next great one. He or she gets a paid gig at the apex of the profession, Forest Lawn, right here in Tinseltown. And so the challenges they pass have to be severe. Also, of course, they all share a house.
Severe? The challenges seem, to this reporter at least, to be extreme.
Hello, embalmers.
Hello.
Adolfo,
yes.
Your challenge is this 400-pound man just run over by a natural gas bus whose driver couldn't find the new location for the brake. Have fun with him.
Gretchen, I need 2 pounds of face putty, and I need it quick.
And I'm supposed to be like, I'm going to drop what I'm working on to help him.
Embalmers, your challenge just got tougher. The service is in just 2 hours.
Oh, no.
We knew we had parlor cred because I've been an award-winning embalmer for the last 12 years, but we needed some eye candy. That's where Ulrika Koss came in.
After the lingerie model career kind of came to its natural end, this seemed like the obvious next step, this or doing mature lingerie modeling, and these people are just so creative.
Danny, I don't know what that's supposed to look like.
A Hispanic biker?
No, I know, but according to his bio, this person was not Hispanic and was never a biker.
Well, I wasn't going from his bio. He had a biker's bone structure.
Pimp My Stiff premieres on the Glue Network. Named because it's supposed to be easy to stick to, shortly after the first of the year.
That closes the lid on this edition, but Inside Extra Access Tonight comes rolling back tomorrow with the results of our latest IEAT poll.
We asked you who your favorite superhero is, and the results will have Spider-Man eating flies.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
This is Le Show, and yeah, the turntables skip. What do you want me to do? I don't make them. I don't repair them. I don't own them. Ladies and gentlemen, NATO has hired... Now, NATO, you know NATO. It's the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance, Treaty Organization. They're over there in Afghanistan right now. That's their first non-European venture. Things aren't going that well. So if you're NATO... No, come on, go with me now. You're NATO, okay? I know, you have to quit your job and get a bigger house, but you're NATO. What do you do? Who do you add to the mix? What do you bring on board to strengthen the whole NATO thing? A Coca-Cola executive with experience in image making and foreign policy. That's who they've hired to update NATO's brand image. Come on. Come on, it's all going down the toilet. Admit it now. Michael Stopford. So he has a Stopford wife. A British-born U.S. citizen worked for the United Nations and the British Foreign Office before joining Coca-Cola. So you see, he's yin and he's yang. He's young. The New York Times reported he's expected to start work next month at NATO's Deputy Assistant Secretary General for Strategic Communication Services, i.e. PR guy. Internal NATO documents show that surveys have found that the percentage of people in European countries who think NATO is essential dropped sharply between 2002 and 2007. Those are the years when NATO was, doing all that, you know what they were doing during those 5 years when they were so essential. NATO has already started an internet-based TV service. NATO has a TV service. Maybe I should try selling. And a media information center in Afghanistan. Stopford has been in charge of protecting the Coca-Cola brand for 2 years. Well, nobody's exploded an IED under Coca-Cola then in that period, have they? See, it worked. And there are no elephants on the streetcars either. See, it all works. And now, ladies and gentlemen, on a related subject, news from outside the bubble. The good news is that the water here in the toilet is warm. The toilet that we're all going down. Barack Obama and John McCain say more U.S. troops should be sent to Afghanistan, and President Bush agrees. This according to Jonathan Landay of McClatchy Newspapers, who was right every step of the way on our way into Iraq. He continues, deploying additional forces could backfire, however, if the United States and its allies don't devise a coherent strategy to defeat the Taliban, strengthen the Afghan government, bolster the country's economy, and deprive Islamic militants of their safe haven in Pakistan. We've just seen the worst violence since the 2001 U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. The war claiming more U.S. dead than Iraq for the first time in the last 2 months. In an interview with McClatchy, Obama said U.S. goals in Afghanistan should be relatively modest. More foreign troops, however, would do little than turn more war-weary Afghans against the U.S.-backed Afghan President Karzai if they aren't part of a broader and more effective counterinsurgency strategy, some U.S. officials warned. There's not one strategy with one person in charge, complained a U.S. defense official. If we'd asked the Taliban to draw an organizational chart for allied forces in Afghanistan, they would have drawn this one. A more coherent approach, they said, these experts, would streamline the U.S. and NATO chains of command, or bring in somebody from Coca-Cola, end restrictions that some allies place on their soldiers, and use force far more judiciously to reduce civilian casualties. Where have we heard that before? In addition, Karzai's government requires more help and more pressure to deliver basic services to its impoverished people, build competent police, and reform the dysfunctional legal system. What's wrong with a dysfunctional legal system? It's working fine for us. An even greater challenge is to develop an effective policy to end the refuge that the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and other groups enjoy along Afghanistan's border with Pakistan, according to these experts and U.S. officials. An increase in troops is absolutely necessary, albeit insufficient, alone to stabilize Afghanistan, said a U.S. defense official who requested anonymity because he likes his knees working just the way they do. We can lose Afghanistan for too little securing the people, he says. So, maybe another surge, maybe not. Maybe a D-surge, maybe a blue surge. Maybe an insurge. Or an inseam. I don't know. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And now, in the good news department, yeah, While conducting routine maintenance of manufactured home units this week in Indiana, FEMA has identified a substance suspected to be mold on the doors and door jams of water heater compartments in a number of emergency trailers sent to Indiana in the wake of the Mississippi River flooding up there. Initial tests identified the substance as mold. This problem concerns Indiana flood victims who are residing in FEMA-provided manufactured homes with exterior water heater compartments. FEMA believes the mold is isolated in the external water heater compartment. That's what FEMA believes. The Indiana State Department of Health will be visiting each of the trailers to check for possible indoor mold issues. There does not appear to be immediate health concern, they say, but it's FEMA. You know what I'm saying? It's FEMA, ladies and gentlemen. FEMA, for your listening pleasure. There seems to be a little bit of a problem with the nuclear industry in France, the government-owned nuclear industry in France. I know it's cheap, safe, plentiful, and too safe to meter. But now 100 staff at a nuclear plant in southern France have been exposed to a low dose of radiation, according to the firm Électricité de France. They were slightly contaminated. How are you feeling today? Slightly contaminated by radioactive particles that escaped from a pipe at a reactor complex in Tricastin. The incident comes 2 weeks after a leak forced the temporary closure of a reactor at the same facility. It's the fourth incident at a French nuclear site in recent weeks. Cheap, safe, clean. What do you want? Wednesday's incident at the huge nuclear complex near the town of Avignon was not connected to the earlier uranium leak. Oh, that's good news. They're totally separate accidents. I find that reassuring. I don't know about you. The company says sensors, with an S, detected a rise in the radiation level while maintenance work was being carried out at a reactor that had been shut since July 12th. The rise in radiation prompted almost 100 workers to be evacuated and sent for medical tests. 70 of them show low traces of radio elements. The company said the incident would not affect people's health or the environment. But they're hiring a guy from Coca-Cola. No. What concerns us is less the level of the people contaminated than the number of people contaminated, said the spokeswoman from the agency. Independent French nuclear monitoring body, I can't even read this name. Try this, CRIIRAD, GRIIRAD, says it is concerned by the number of leaks from French nuclear power stations that have occurred in recent weeks. This type of contamination is a recurring problem, but that many people in such a short period of time, this worries us, said the director of the agency. 2 weeks ago, the authorities had to issue a ban on fishing and water sports in two local rivers because of uranium leaks. The environment minister has since ordered tests of all France's nuclear power plants to ensure such leaks have not gone undetected elsewhere. On Friday of this week, energy company Areva said liquid containing slightly enriched uranium leaked at another one of its sites in southeast France. And the same day, 15 workers were exposed to what the company called non-harmful traces of radioactive elements at a plant in the Alpine region. France derives more than 75% of its electricity from its 59 nuclear plants. Non-harmful radioactive traces. I'm going to put my money on those. And ladies and gentlemen, the national media continue to obsess on the issue of the vice presidential choices of the two candidates, possibly because they might be important this year. And oddly enough, on one of the television news channels this week, among the people pictured as a possible running mate, I think for John McCain, was, of all people, Colin Powell. We haven't heard a lot from him lately, have we? Until now.
I had a doctrine. It had my name. Overwhelming force. That was my game. But I played with the grown-ups. And it wasn't the same. They snapped a big towel doctrine of power. Thank God I still had my smooth moves. I could write a book, and maybe I will. I was trained to lead young people to kill. But when I say follow me, lately they don't. There's that book I could write, but maybe I won't. But I tell myself, Colin, you just keep on rolling with those smooth moves. Just laying down those gravitas grooves. No matter what the intel proves, all I needed was my smooth moves. You know, I wanted the White House, but my wife told me no. So pimping for war was as far as I'd go. I served my country, some doctor didn't tell. I was most trusted, then I poisoned my well. But I tell myself, Colin, you just keep on rolling with those smooth moves. Trying not to hear history's hooves. Just as long as the boss approves, I keep laying down those smooth moves. Yeah, I had a doctrine. It said, quote, a warning support from the people who vote. An exit strategy, we knew that by rote. But the grown-up said, hey, just hold our coat. Thank God I still had my smooth moves.
Yeah, that was from Songs of the Bushmen. Why did you ask? And yes, it is available now. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of the show. Don't forget, if you want to feed your fish less food, feed them Prozac. The program returns next week at the same time over the same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radio, if the communists don't keep them from merging, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download. for members at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the fish getting really mellow. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And to Bob Dunn here at WWNO-FM New Orleans, proudly not carrying this broadcast, for helping to make today's show possible. Email address for this program and the playlists of the music heard on this program and so much more. Available 24 hours a day, 7.5 days a week at harryshearer.com. Won't you? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Monique. So long from New Orleans.